Maine's beloved blueberries. What is your favorite way to eat Maine blueberries? In a cobbler? In pie? Pancakes? On yogurt with granola? In blueberry ice cream? All of the above. Well, you aren't alone. The wild blueberry is Maine's official state fruit. More than 44,000 acres of Maine are covered in blueberry barrens. Maine growers cultivate both wild, low-bush blueberries and high-bush blueberries. They are an important part of Maine's agricultural economy. But recently, many blueberry growers have faced tough times as an oversupply of berries from Canada has driven down prices. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We'll learn how blueberries are grown, the challenges faced by farmers, and we'll discuss the future of this beloved fruit. Today's Maine Calling is part of our year-long focus on what is iconic to Maine. That's next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Whether high bush or wild, fresh or frozen, in jams or pies, blueberries are a beloved symbol of Maine. Today, we'll learn how they're grown, farmed, and marketed, and what makes them so important to the state. Joining me in the studio, Lily Calderwood. She is with the University of Maine's Cooperative Extension, where she is a wild blueberry specialist and assistant professor of horticulture. And David Handley. He's also with UMaine Cooperative Extension as a vegetable and small fruit specialist. As always, we want to hear from you. What makes Maine blueberries special to you? Do you have questions about how to grow them or where to pick them? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. And a note here, this is part of Maine Calling's ongoing coverage of topics that reflect what is iconic in Maine. Welcome to you both. And David, I'm going to start with you. Give us a primer. What's the difference between a wild blueberry and a high bush blueberry?
Okay, well, a wild blueberry is what we call a managed crop. It's a crop that would be there whether we were or not. And generally what we mean by managed is that we're stopping the natural progression of things that would normally happen in a situation where, for example, a forest fire occurs. Those trees burn down. There's plants that come up very quickly after that. And the wild blueberry is one of those things. It kind of takes over in these acid, gravelly soils that we have in parts of Maine. And then over time, if allowed, softwoods would come up and eventually shade them out, and then they'd be replaced by the hardwoods. So what we do by managing it is stop that progression, and we just keep the wild blueberries there so we can enjoy them.
Okay, so wild blueberries are, as the name implies, they grow in the wild.
That's right.
And they are low, and they're in something. I've heard the expression over the years of blueberry barren.
Yep.
What does barren mean exactly?
Well, what that is a flat area that the glaciers kind of carved out and left in a distinct, very flat zone, and it's just completely covered with blueberries. It's an incredible thing to see. If you haven't seen it, go down east sometime and make the stop just so you can see it, especially just before harvest, to see the sea of blue out there is wonderful.
And then in the fall, the sea of red.
And that's right. The fall foliage is also very wonderful.
And then a high bush blueberry is something that somebody has planted
right,
and grown.
Right.
A farmer has perhaps in rows in a field.
Absolutely. And this is a cultivated crop. This is one that's planted intentionally. It is a different species than the wild type, and it will grow up to 8, 12 feet tall if allowed to. But generally, we prune it, and we care for it, we fertilize it. And as you said, we'll plant it intentionally in rows. So it's a very different critter.
Okay, your turn, Lily. Give us a little bit of history. How long have people been eating wild blueberries in Maine? And when did it become a crop that was something that was sold and became sort of part of Maine's heritage?
So wild blueberries have been cultivated all the way back 10,000 years ago by indigenous people in Maine. And they picked them and cultivated a crop that they used. They dried it out and ate it that way and ate it throughout the year. And as people started to move to the area, farmers started to grow more and more of it. And by, the 1800s, by 1890, Cooperative Extension was actually helping farmers to grow this crop.
So in the 1840s, they started, and then by the 1890s, this was pretty well organized. And I know that the advent of
freezing blueberries really changed the crop. When did that sort of happen? When did blueberries go from Maine wild blueberries go from being something that was grown and sold a couple weeks a year, a few weeks a year, to something that's a year-round crop?
Right. So, around World War II, I believe, canning first came in, and so blueberries were canned first, and then as refrigeration and freezing became more accessible. The crop started to be frozen and distributed even further. So for the war, they were canned to bring soldiers a source of vitamin C to kind of prevent scurvy and as a staple for those troops.
All right. Wondering about the scale of what this means to Maine's economy, to Maine agriculture. David, I said at the very top of the program, 44,000 acres. What does that mean?
Most of that will be wild blueberries, so I'm going to chuck that back to Lily. If we look at the high bush blueberry situation, this is a different crop. It's a retail crop, mostly pick your own families going out. Total acreage there is only around 200, between 200 and 300, according to the last agricultural census. So we pale in comparison to the wild blueberry industry.
Okay, so what is there a dollar figure? What is Maine's blueberry crop worth to the economy?
$128 million.
And there's not been great times for blueberry farmers in the last couple of years. Explain to us what's going on.
Yeah, so the prices have gone down because more and more people want to eat blueberries all over the world, which is a great thing and definitely something that we encourage. We want people to eat more and more blueberries because they're so good, tasty, and good for us. But as people have taken on blueberries into their diet, farmers have seen it as an opportunity, and different states have started to grow it, and even different countries all over the world. So there are more and more high bush and low bush blueberries grown now. So that, you know, it's just more competition.
And a lot right over the border in Canada.
Yep, a lot in Canada. So the wild blueberry is a maritime crop. So Maine all the way up through Nova Scotia and New Brunswick, and even in Quebec too.
And why maritime? Is there something about the salt air that is good for the blueberries?
I wouldn't say salt air. Salt generally isn't a good thing for plants, but it's really these soils, the glacial till soils, and the acidity of those soils.
How has this spring been? I know that in April it was really, really wet and that a lot of growers were worried. Have those worries been true?
It's a late spring, and I would say the low bush blueberries are still behind, but that's happened before, and we have caught up in the past, so there are a lot of blueberries out there.
The problem with the high bush type is because they grow higher, they're not protected by the snows in the wintertime. Snow is an excellent insulator, and if your plants are under the snow, what happens above that, you know, all kinds of nasty things can happen, but they're protected. High bush blueberries don't have that advantage, so we got very cold very quickly last fall. And the buds hadn't had a chance to go dormant yet. So we saw some pretty significant winter injury in the high bush crop this year. It's very variable. Some parts of the state saw it, other parts didn't. So most areas the crop looks pretty good, but there are some areas where they got hurt pretty bad this year.
All right. Well, on the line with us now is Greg Bridges. He is owner of Bridges Wild Maine Blueberry Farm in Calais and was formerly marketing chairman with the Wild Blueberry Association of North America. Thanks for calling in, Greg.
Hi, Jennifer. Hi, David. And hi, Lily.
Hi.
Greg, tell us what you do at your farm. You are the wild blueberries, correct? How many?
Correct. We have 200 or 300 acres of wild blueberry land that we've been passed down. I'm the third generation farmer for wild blueberries and probably fifth or sixth generation since we landed on the shore. And we farm in the Calais area, which is mostly in Medibemps in the town of Charlotte.
And are most of your berries being sold frozen or fresh?
In the past, probably 99% of our crop was sold into the frozen market. We've kind of shifted gears a little bit and concentrating more on to fresh sales during the month of August when the berries are ripe.
Okay. We just talked very briefly about what's happening in the blueberry industry as far as the oversupply. Is that why you're switching from frozen to more fresh?
That's correct. There's always been ups and downs in the market. This crop, we normally sell it to the processors with no given price for the crop. It's kind of based on what they could sell them for. In the past, there's been, you know, huge swings in the price paid to the farmer, but there has been a general decline with the surplus of wild blueberries and then the huge growth in the cultivated blueberry market around the world.
Tell us about the bill that was just signed into law in Maine. What does it do and why did it come about?
I think that a lot of farmers were frustrated that they didn't have a say for the policy and maybe lobbying effort to do with government affairs within the state, the federal, and maybe even international levels to basically, you know, deal with subsidies in Canada for wild, maybe subsidies for cultivated in other parts of the country. And I think it's important for farmers to have a real grasp on like the USDA bailout for wild blueberries that make sure some of the money's passed down to farmers, which I think is a I would like to see the USDA work on that in the future.
So this bill, and tell me if I'm right, gives blueberry growers equal representation on the Wild Blueberry Commission. It used to be that processors had more votes. Is that accurate?
That's correct, Jennifer. And now we're going to have an equal membership. I'm not thinking there's going to be huge changes, but I think maybe we need to try to do more to protect Maine interests only. I mean, we share a lot of interest with our Canadian friends in the wild blueberry industry, and I think it's important that we always, whenever we set a policy or try to move forward, that we're concentrating on a Maine effort only, not to worry about the whole segment. But I think there's still a lot of cooperation to be done with the Canadians, but I think it's important that Maine interests come first.
Well, as you know, Greg, we're doing this program because, you know, the Maine blueberry is such an iconic and important part of Maine's economy. And I'm wondering if you're worried about the future of Maine's wild blueberry crop and what do you think needs to happen?
Well, being a third generation, I never thought that I would have to go and start another vocation at this age in my life. I'm in my middle 50s. I'm having to do more work off the farm to pay the bills and to cover my taxes and other insurance. My children have decided to become scientific professionals and you know, probably they won't come back to the farm. I'm not sure. We'll see what happens in the future. But with the decline in pricing, it's just not a stable enough income to provide for the family like it used to.
Mm. Before I let you go, what is your favorite way to eat a wild Maine blueberries?
My favorite way is a simple way, and I would love to see this. Maybe, you know, we're going to have maybe humans going to Mars here in the next couple of years, and they're going to be exposed to a lot of space oxidants is what I want to call it. And since wild blueberries is such a antioxidant fruit, and, you know, between the taste of it, the dark blue pigment, there's a lot of antioxidant properties to the berry. And my favorite way to eat the fruit is just frozen. As it's thawing out, it's like eating ice cream. It's really simple. It's an easy way to ingest a healthy food in a simple way.
Well, Greg, thanks so much for calling in. That's Greg Bridges. He owns Bridges Wild Blueberry Farm. You know, we talked a little bit about this spring, and I want to ask you a broader question, and that's about climate change. What kind of impact are we seeing, if any, on Maine's blueberry crop because of climate change? And what could happen looking at what's being predicted?
Well, over the this spring has been more wet. But over the past four or so seasons, we've had a pretty dry July and August. And from my perspective, that has, you know, that could be a trend, although the general Northeast is expected to become wetter. We have more precipitation extremes that are predicted, and sometimes those precipitation events happen in the fall, and they're a really hard dump of water, but before we harvest in July is pretty dry. So for farms that don't irrigate, the bush blueberry is not as irrigated as high bush blueberry. I would say all high bush is irrigated. And the low bush, the larger farms are able to irrigate. But because it's a field crop, the smaller farms haven't had to make that investment yet. So that might be something coming along. One other thing is that we've had some late frost events in the past. Last year, there was a really hard frost in June, like June 11th, which is very late. So that can cause some serious crop loss, and it definitely did.
The other thing we're seeing is that we get these more extremes, more cold, more warm, or especially warm-ups during the winter can really mess things up because blueberries have what we call a chilling requirement. When they go dormant in the fall, they have to get a long, steady, cold period in order for fruit buds to properly form and open the next spring. And if you get these springs where it goes up and down and up and down and up and down, sometimes they wake up too soon. And then early frost or even a late frost are much more damaging. And then finally, the change in climate has also changed how we deal with pests because we're dealing with new pests that can now seem to get along here that in the past probably couldn't because it does get too cold. And we're just struggling to catch up and figure out how we're going to deal with this.
So serious challenges.
Possibly.
Yeah. We'll go to Steve calling from Biddeford. Hi, Steve. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Thank you. I heard that used coffee grounds are good for blueberries. I just put in some plants. I was wondering if I can overdo it. And I was also wondering if you have any good suggestions on dissuading the squirrels from getting them before them, before I get there.
I'm sure you're not the only one with that question, Steve.
I'll jump in because I assume you're talking about a high bush blueberry here. The reason coffee grounds I recommend is because they'll help acidify the soil. And that's one thing blueberries like is an acid soil. So when we typically talk about growing a vegetable garden or most berry crops, you're looking at a soil pH of around between 6 and 7. And blueberries like this acid condition where they want to be between 4.8 and 5.2. So oftentimes what we'll do on a commercial scale is we'll add sulfur to the soil to bring that pH down. But in a home garden situation, you can do things like coffee grounds and so forth. And yes, you can overdo it. So you want to have a soil test done first to see where your pH level is and then determine how much of any product you want to use to acidify that soil and bring it into the right shape.
All right. Thanks. Oh, and what about keeping the birds out of there and the chipmunks?
Netting is really the best way to go, especially on a small scale. Netting is a bit of an investment. I know it's expensive, but if you take care of it, it should last a long, long time. But when you buy rubber snakes or owls whose heads spin around and so forth, birds and animals become quickly accustomed to those. So unless you want to be out there yourself moving them around all day, they don't tend to be very effective.
All right. Well, good luck, Steve. An email from JD. My fiancé and I bought a farm with 4 acres of wild blueberries left untouched for 10 years. The past 2 years, we have removed all invasive plants, etc. What should we do now? We tried hiring someone to burn it, but no one will take the job. It is surrounded on 3 sides by woods. What is the best way to manage it?
Well, I'm glad you want to manage this land that you have as wild blueberries. The first thing you could do is split the field. So half of it could be considered a crop year, and the other half would be considered a prune year. And what I mean by that is that you would either burn or mow half of it and then let the other side produce a crop so that every year you have blueberries to pick. If you can't burn, mowing is a really good option.
All right. And if you can't get a traditional lawn mower over it, do people use a weed whacker?
Well, you want to get as close to the ground as possible because the best blueberry or the most blueberries come from the new growth. So you want a straight stem to come up. So you want to we call it flail mowing on a commercial scale, but a lawnmower would be best if you're a homeowner.
All right, JD, good luck. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do North Yarmouth Academy, where who you are now is just as important as who you will become. Toddler to grade 12, NYA.org, by the Lunder Foundation in support of the Colby College Museum of Art, always free and open to all. And Sheridan Construction, a Maine company committed to building on a tradition of excellence for over 70 years.
On the next Fresh Air, which party is in power in the next decade in Congress and state houses could be determined by last month's Supreme Court decisions on gerrymandering and the census citizenship question, and by what the Trump administration does next about the census. We'll talk about why with Ari Berman, who covers voting rights for Mother Jones. Join us.
Coming up tonight at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. July 20th marks the 50-year anniversary since Apollo 11 landed on the moon and Neil Armstrong took his giant step for mankind. Maine Public Television is broadcasting a special program, Chasing the Moon, a comprehensive 6-hour look at the space race with the Soviet Union, the failures and successes of the Apollo program, the final moon landing triumph, and the politics of the time. Part 1 aired last night. Parts 2 and 3 are tonight and tomorrow night from 9 to 11 on Maine Public Television. Chasing the Moon, tonight at 9 on Maine Public Television.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, all about blueberries. Joining me, David Hanley, UMaine Cooperative Extended Vegetable and Small Fruit Specialist, and Lily Calderwood, Cooperative Extension Wild Blueberry Specialist and Assistant Professor of Horticulture. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email talk@mainblick.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. And Lily, I know you wanted to correct something you said earlier in the program. You're talking about when we started to can blueberries. When did we start canning blueberries? When did the troops begin to eat them?
For the Civil War, not World War II. Excuse me. Yeah.
So a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very long time ago.
Yeah. So interesting. Well, joining me on the line now is Bruce Hall with Wyman's in Cherryfield. He's an agronomist there. Thanks for calling in, Bruce.
Thank you, Jennifer.
I think a lot of people recognize the name Wyman's. They've seen them, the Wyman's berries in their grocery store. Tell us about Wyman's. How did the company get started?
Well, Wyman's started almost 150 years ago, actually. We were officially founded in 1874, and we started out canning seafood, actually. We had a cannery facility located in Millbridge. And shortly thereafter, we don't know the exact year, but it's somewhere around 2 or 3 years after that, we started canning wild blueberries.
How many blueberries are produced each season? How far and wide are Wyman's frozen blueberries sold?
Well, wild blueberries, you know, in the state of Maine, we've been, you know, as high as up to around 100 million pounds. You know, in recent years, we've been floating around 2/3 of that number. And worldwide, you know, we sell nationally here in the U.S. Our retail product is available throughout the country. And internationally, we sell into a number of markets in the ingredient channel. So products like yogurts, jams, baked goods, et cetera.
Is there any spot in the world right now where blueberries are becoming increasingly popular? Any place where you're kind of surprised to see blueberries take off?
In Asia, blueberries are pretty popular. Wild blueberries, especially, are pretty popular. Japan has been a strong market for quite a while now, actually, and they prefer wild blueberry jam. But you know, more recently, there's been other Asian countries that have been showing interest as well in wild blueberries.
We talked earlier about the recent oversupply of wild blueberries and blueberries in general. How is that affecting Wyman's?
You know, the prices, you know, they affect us quite a bit. Right now, wild blueberries in Maine are differentiated, and in the Northeast are differentiated. But in general, throughout the U.S. and worldwide, most consumers don't know about wild blueberries. And so as a result of that, our product here in Maine is really tied to the commodity market, which is the frozen market. And so Wyman's, you know, we're committed to really distinguishing wild blueberries and how we're unique and of more benefit, particularly, you know, in the areas of health and, you know, taste and the intense flavor that comes with a wild blueberry.
All right. Well, I know before you go, you wanted to talk about the healthfulness of Maine blueberries. Give us the pitch. Why are Maine wild blueberries so much better?
Well, yeah, you know, Maine wild blueberries, we have 2 times the antioxidants of their high bush cousins. They're packed with anthocyanins. There's a ton of emerging medical research coming out right now showing health benefits, you know, pertaining to cardiovascular health or brain health and cognition, gut health. There's even some studies out there right now that indicate that wild blueberries have some cancer-fighting properties. I mean, it's just a remarkable product, a remarkable fruit that's grown right here on our back door. And, you know, the goal is to get this worldwide. And so everyone knows that there's 2 types of blueberries out there and that one of them is available in their freezer section year round.
Thanks so much for calling in, Bruce. That was Bruce Hall, Wyman's agronomist. You know what, Bruce, before I hang up, though, what's your favorite way to eat blueberries?
My favorite way is actually taking, similar to Greg earlier, taking a frozen blueberry, and my 2-year-old daughter loves them just like that. And so I like to just kind of, with my finger, just sort of snap them a little bit across the table so they roll in her direction, and then she catches it and she eats it.
Nice.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, and good luck with this season. We have a Facebook message from Ned. How much in the way of herbicides and pesticides are used in the cultivation of wild blueberries? Is there research on the effect of those chemicals on humans?
Well, there is a little bit of a difference between high bush and low bush, just because they're grown differently. And high bush has these different varieties, whereas low bush, we've got a patchwork of different blueberry plants that are genetically different from each other, creating this blanket across the ground. So they're treated differently. Herbicides are used, insecticides are used, and fungicides. But, you know, they're really not used as much as you might think. There could be 1 to 2 applications per year, and it depends if you're talking about the prune year or the crop year. And pesticides have been tested. There's been research done specifically on the health of, or on the, safeness. How safe is this product for human consumption? And that's done by the EPA. They are rigorous studies, and there's a re-entry period for every product, and there's also a pre-harvest interval, which means you can only apply a product within a certain amount of time before harvest, and that's for our safety.
Have the pesticides and herbicides that are used on blueberries changed over the years?
Absolutely. Yep. So there have there were herbicides were started to be used, I think, in the 60s or 70s, and they really doubled production. As when you remove that weed competition, the blueberry can grow better. And so that was a benefit to the farmers' viability. And,
one of the things I like dealing with blueberries, the many crops I deal with, dealing with both vegetables and berry crops, and people call me and say, you know, I want to be an organic grower and stuff. And when they say, I want to grow blueberries, I'm usually saying, oh, good, because that of the ones I deal with, it tends to have a smaller pest complex and one that's more easily manageable than some of the other crops I work with. We've talked about grapes before. That's a very challenging crop because there are some very challenging pest complexes there, especially if you want to do it organically. But blueberries a little bit less so. There are, not to say there aren't pests. There are pests, and pesticides are one of the ways that you can deal with them.
All right. We'll go to Lucy, who's calling from Wells. Hi, Lucy. Go ahead.
Hi. I grew up in Waldo County, and like many of my friends, I grew up in a farming household where we worked very hard in isolation for no pay. So when the opportunity came to rake blueberries, myself and about 40 other people my age jumped at the chance to earn money, and it was just a wonderful experience. There was the social aspect of it and earning the money. We got to the Barrens by all jumping on a cattle truck, an open-air cattle truck, or in the back of a pickup. This would have been in the 70s, and it was just a great way to make some money. Later on in the 90s, my son also raked blueberries, and I was surprised at how few teams there were. And I'm just wondering, what do the farmers get for workers nowadays? And are they using more machines than they are people? I just am wondering about that. I teach children about the blueberry industry, children in southern Maine, and teach them terms about barrens and ricks. So what is the status of workers nowadays to bring in the berries?
Yeah, Lucy, thanks so much for calling. I think many, many people listening have a memory of raking as children. And, who can forget once you've seen children with their mouths all covered in a blue dye as they rake some and eat some. Is that still the tradition?
Some farms are definitely still raking by hand, and I can't tell you how many people I have met who are now in other professions, but the first thing they tell me is that I raked wild blueberries when I was a kid, and they made a little bit of money doing it, and that's awesome. So it really is a heritage crop in Maine, and I think it's great that there are a few farms now starting to do rake your own low bush wild blueberries. So that's a kind of a fun thing for tourists to do, to understand how much hard work that actually is. You know, you'll rake for a few minutes and be done. But yes, there have been advances in technology to harvest mechanically. But even so, depending on how large your farm is, there are different ways to harvest mechanically. So there's a walk-behind harvester, and then there are also larger tractor harvesters.
Would you say that most are using the mechanical harvesting now?
Yes, I would say most are using mechanical, but there are still some fields that are very rocky, and it's hard to get in between those rocks if you've got a smaller operation.
Most of the high bush crop, of course, is pick your own, so the customer is harvesting. But there are a couple of mechanical harvesters, and I believe someone's going to call who has one here, Sam Blackstone. But that's a very different machine than what they use in the wild industry. But mechanization is really being driven by the fact that the labor pool is just getting very much smaller, and it's not accustomed to agricultural work and agricultural pay.
All right. Well, Lucy, thanks so much for calling and sharing that. And on a related note, an email from Jan: could your speakers talk about the importance of migrant workers and immigrant workers to the blueberry harvest? Specifically, could you speak to the changes in labor over the last 10 or 15 years? How much of the harvest is done by migrant workers today?
I'm not sure exactly what percentage, but I know that like Wyman's Spruce, who just called in, they have hand rakers who come up from Central America. And even there's some people who have been coming up year after year, and they absolutely love coming to Maine to rake blueberries. And even some of them have stayed, and their restaurants that they've put up. So
yeah, I've heard the best Mexican food in Maine is in down East Maine.
Absolutely.
You're nodding, Lily. Yeah,
it's so good. Right in Millbridge.
You've been there.
Absolutely.
We'll go to Stephen, who's calling from York County. Hi, Stephen. Go ahead. Stephen, hi. Go ahead. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, Stephen, you're on the air. Tell us your story.
Oh, hi. Hey, I'm 72, and I was raised in the Berwicks. Southern Maine, York County, and my great-grandmother used to take us out in the forest after a piece of woods had been logged, probably 6 or 8 years, and we find high bush wild blueberries, and sometimes before the trees shade them out, they'll become up to 12, 15 feet tall, and the berries are absolutely delicious, and they have all of the wild low bush qualities, except you don't have to get on your hands and knees. These blueberries are prevalent all the way up. I presently live in Mid-Coast, the Rockland area, and I pick wild blueberries out in the forest there and in the Wells area. So I didn't want your listeners to think that all high bush blueberries are cultivated. They are just a delicious project, a product that people are overlooking everywhere.
I couldn't agree more, but that's where those cultivated high bush came from, was from those wild berries, and they came from everywhere, from plants in New Hampshire and plants in Maine, but most of the breeding work was done down in New Jersey by Dr. Frederick Colville and Elizabeth White, who was a private breeder, but they got germplasm from all over the place. They offered money to people and said, if you've got wild high bush blueberries around with good fruit, send them to us, and we'll pay you for them. And it was the work of those two doing the breeding to develop what we now have, the cultivated berry. They picked the ones with the largest fruit size. Elizabeth White used to take her wedding ring off, and if the berry fit through it, it was too small. So she'd go for something bigger
than that.
That's
a big berry.
Yeah, it's a big berry. And that's why they started releasing those cultivated types, with the direct descendants of the wild ones you're picking in the woods.
Well, Stephen, thanks for calling. And Sandy sent in a similar email. Please note that high bush blueberries are a native wild species, often found in wetlands, not just a cultivated crop here in Maine. Lily.
And there are also half-highs that we find along the edge of fields. So along, you'll have low bush out in the full sun, and then half-highs along the edge, and then wild high bush in the woods.
Yep. We have an email from George. You described the different appearance and cultivation of wild and high bush blueberries, but are there differences in flavor and nutrition? We know what Bruce Hall's answer to that question is. David, do you think there's a difference?
Well, a friendly debate that gone between the people who work with wild and the people who work with the cultivated. So flavor-wise, I think it's pretty dramatic, the differences you can see within varieties. And the same is true if you walk into a wild blueberry field. The different clones within the field will have different characteristics. So you could say yes about certain clones versus certain cultivated varieties. But in general, what's important is that the wild blueberries are smaller. They have a higher dry matter content. So they're things that are in there, the nutrients and so forth, a little more concentrated. So we can say that.
Well, we are talking about blueberries in Maine. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Cumberland Crossing, a new retirement community offering access to Ocean View at Falmouth Care Continuum. CumberlandCrossingRC.com. And New England Cancer Specialist, proud to be a member of the Dana-Farber Cancer Care Collaborative. Learn more at NewEnglandCancerSpecialist.org.
Academy Award-winning screenwriter Dustin Lance Black talks about his Texas upbringing in a conservative military household. From there, he moved to California, where he found both success in the arts as well as a role as a public advocate for LGBTQ rights. Learn about how the lifelong bond with his mother helped him to succeed professionally and personally on the next Commonwealth Club radio program.
Coming up shortly after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. This week, our Maine Public News Tell Me More tour is heading to Ogunquit as Maine Public News travels the state to hear directly from you, learn what you feel are the most important issues in your community, and how Maine Public News can best serve you and keep you informed. We'll be in Ogunquit this Thursday evening at 5:30 at the Ogunquit Museum of American Art at 543 Shore Road. Our discussion will be led by Deputy News Director Susan Sharon with news reporter Patty White, who will also share their experiences about reporting in Maine and some of the projects and stories they're working on. For more information about all the Tell Me More tour visits, please visit mainepublic.org and click on Events or the banner ad.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Maine's beloved blueberries. Joining me, Lily Calderwood and David Handley. They're both blueberry experts with UMaine Cooperative Extension. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Earlier, Lily, somebody had a question about pesticides and herbicides. Is there any research ongoing about reducing the use of pesticides and herbicides in blueberries?
Absolutely. So I wanted to mention that many farmers, I would say all farmers, but there's always an exception. Everybody's using IPM, which is Integrated Pest Management. And that is really a group of tools that are both cultural and use pesticides. And the goal is to reduce the use of pesticides. And everyone is doing their best to manage the land as sustainably as possible. And it's absolutely true. The farmers in Maine are very conscious of the environment, and they're working very hard to protect our land. They are our stewards of the land, some of them. And especially with pollinators, growers try as hard as possible not to spray during bloom so that the pollinators can, both native and managed bees can do really well.
We'll go to Brenda, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Brenda. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I am one of the owners of Norway Brewing Company. And we use wild Maine blueberries in one of our beers. We are located in Norway, but we use blueberries that are grown in South Paris from a local wild Maine blueberry grower. And it's a farmhouse beer, so we want all the flavors that are on the blueberries to be incorporated into the beer.
So, Brenda, what do blueberries taste like in beer? Describe the flavor.
Well, the farmhouse beer tends to be a little tart, And the blueberries just give a subtle flavor at the end. It gives you the flavor of Maine.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. If you're near a computer, post a picture on our Facebook page of the beer. Go ahead, David.
I would just point out that Lily mentioned how the Native Americans used blueberries extensively in their diet that lived in this area. But as soon as the colonists, the Europeans, started coming into this area, they immediately saw the potential for blueberries in beer and wine and started doing it, using them for that purpose. So
Brenda's not the first.
No.
Brenda, thank you so much for calling in. We're going to go to Chris, who's calling from Bar Harbor. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. I live in Morrison County, and I participated in 53 seasons as a hand raker. And I actually raked with a guy 3 years back who did 80 seasons, and he started when World War II was still going on. And every time there's a verse in Job that every time I read it, it makes me think of specifically wild blueberries. To cause it to rain on the earth where no man is, wilderness wherein there's no man. I know that a lot of blueberries are irrigated, but there are thousands of acres, especially in Washington County, that don't get that. So it's the heavens that open up. But it's just, I think it's a unique season, and I'm just very thankful to have been able to participate in it.
All right, Chris, 53 years. So characterize, how hard is it? How hard of work?
Well, I thank God I try to stay in shape, but I've lost usually 10 or 15 pounds in the course of the season. I've actually did about 7 or 8 seasons for Wyman's, and I will tell you that my best day was 104. I'm an average raker, but I actually heard of a Wyman's raker this past season who raked 415 half bushel boxes. That's 207 and half bushels of blueberries in a single day, and that's just phenomenal to me.
Oh, my gosh. Well, before I let you go, I'm going to ask you, what's your favorite way to eat blueberries?
In a pie.
Good for you. Thanks so much, Chris, for calling in. We'll move to Steve, who's calling from Auburn. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. I'm a homeowner. I have some high bush and about a half acre of low bush berries, and I have been looking for natural ways to control the weeds, and have started using pine needles. And I wondered if anybody's tried that or whether that's a really bad idea. And the second thing is I have been using crushed eggs shells for a calcium supplement. I wondered if they thought that was okay also.
The pine needles sound okay to me because they are acidic. And we actually put on a lot of softwood mulch onto the low bush wild blueberry fields.
Yep. And high bush, same thing. The only knock against pine needles is that they don't last very long. They tend to break down pretty quickly. So as long as you've got a good supply and can keep them on there, they're very good mulch. They're both acidic, as Lily said, but they also provide very good cover. If you can get them on there 4 to 6 inches thick, it'll choke out a lot of the weeds that will try to emerge. Eggshells. My only gripe about eggshells is it takes them a long time to break down and for that calcium to become available to the plants. It's good in that as they break down slowly, they're not going to raise the pH very much, which is what you don't want to do with blueberries. It's difficult to get a calcium source that won't raise the pH beyond where the blueberries want it. But there are means of doing it. Usually we use something like just calcium sulfate or one of these other ones, products that won't raise the pH like limestone will. We don't want to put lime on blueberries.
Steve, thanks for your call. If someone's interested in growing blueberries on their property, is there option if they don't have them naturally really high bush blueberries? Is it possible if you have the right conditions to plant wild blueberries or not really?
You can dig sod from a current existing wild blueberry field and transplant it into a new location. And that seems to work if you mulch it and if it's, a well-draining soil that you're planting it into. But in general, it's hard to grow. The wild blueberries just grow so slowly from seed that I wouldn't recommend planting seeds. You can buy sod from some landscaping companies. There are very few doing it, but some people do.
Okay. And what are good conditions to grow high bush blueberries?
Just a good friable soil. The key, again, is to make sure that you have the acid level where you want them and make sure you're choosing the right varieties because there's a lot of the varieties, as I say, were developed south of here, and they're not adequately hardy. So you want to make sure you have a variety, and there is a recommended list of varieties on the University of Maine website if they want to go there and take a look. Other than that, it's make sure – we spoke earlier about high bush blueberries going in swampy areas. That does not mean you should plant them in the wettest part of your backyard because that's wet for a different reason. That's wet because it drains poorly, probably as a clay soil, and blueberries hate clay soils. They want to be loose, friable soil. So they'll tolerate dampness in the wintertime when they're dormant. They won't tolerate dampness when they're actively growing and try to set fruit. So make sure your soil is well-drained, make sure you have the acidity right, and make sure you have the right varieties.
Okay, full sun?
Full sun is preferred. Blueberries are shade-tolerant, so if you're someone who likes to mix them into the landscape, they'll survive there. But understand, you're sacrificing crop because of that. They're going to produce the best crop in the full sun.
All right. And do you need to plant several? Can you just plant one bush, or
nope.
Do you need to plant several?
Blueberries need cross-pollination, whether we're talking about wild blueberries or whether we're talking about cultivated blueberries. So they need a friend. It's best to actually have three varieties to make sure everybody's getting different pollen.
All right. We have an email from Bob. In the 1980s, a group of us started an organization called MOB, Maine Organic Blueberries. At the time, big growers were all growing conventionally using pesticides. Our group was interested in getting away from herbicides, which harm our environment. I took the Beech Hill Preserve Organic and managed it for 8 years. During that time, I was also called to testify before the Pesticide Control Board on behalf of a local family whose children had been harmed by the chemicals sprayed on blueberry farms that surrounded their home. The family won that case. It's important to remember that blueberries can be grown organically, and for our health and the health of our environment, should be grown organically. My question for you all, what percentage of blueberry growers in Maine are, and not an exact number, are doing it organically? Is this a large percentage of them?
I would say it's a growing number of them. There are 50 certified organic wild blueberry growers, and they're very active and engaged people, which is great. I have a 4-year organic research project looking at some new tactics to manage weeds organically.
Oh, really? Where are you in the 4-year project?
First year, so.
Okay.
A while to go.
What kind of tactics? Are they something someone like a layman like I am would understand?
Yeah, I can try to explain. So there are mechanical ways of controlling weeds, and one thing we're going to try is tine weeding. Tine meaning a tractor pulls an implement that has a bunch of metal tines on it. Kind of like a fork running through the ground. Early in the season, right when the first annual weeds come up, you can kind of dig them right out of the ground, and they'll follow the ground and desiccate, meaning that they would die. And so my idea is that actually blueberries like to be disturbed a bit. So I'm measuring how well the blueberry bounces back. And if they bounce back pretty well, then might be something to add to our IPM toolbox.
All right. Well, we'll go to Kate, who's calling from Hancock. Hi, Kate. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a value-added producer with the Wild Maine Blueberries, and I work primarily with the large freezers and do that for the bulk of my product. Every year I try to work with some small producers and produce some specialty products and buy directly from them, and I've found that some of them are no longer growing. And in the past, these small producers or small growers would sell their harvest to the large freezers. And I'm wondering what impact that's having on the supply to lose some of these small farms.
Is that something you all are looking at?
Yes. I mean, there are a lot of things going on. A lot of small farmers in Maine are aging and not able to farm anymore or farm on a much smaller scale. And that's a pattern happening across agriculture in Maine, but also across the country. So that's a big challenge. And did she ask about organic specifically or?
No, but just on the supply, losing so many small growers, what is that doing to the overall supply?
Yeah, I think the small growers are really important to add creativity and these new ideas to the whole industry. So,
Kate, thanks for your call. We'll go to Eliza, who's calling from Appleton. Hi, Eliza. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks. I am lucky enough to live right next door to a couple of blueberry farmers and as such enjoy the incredible colors of the crops all year round. But I have a quick question, which is, how many species of wild blueberries do we have in Maine?
Good question.
There are two species, Vaccinium angustifolium and Myrtilloides. So they're two different species, but within we call them low sweet and sour top. So the among the low sweet, that's the majority of most fields, and there can be up to 1,500 genetically different individuals in a given field.
Mm. So the low sweet is what we think of if we go to the grocery store and we buy a bag of Maine wild blueberries.
Yeah. And there could be some sour top mixed in. It's really harvested all together. They're a more winter hardy, or that, you know, they ripen a little bit later. So when we harvest the whole field, they're a little bit more tart, but they're just as good.
All right. Well, thanks for your call, Eliza. We have just a little bit of time left, and I'm wondering if either of you have sort of a fun fact about blueberries that you'd like to leave us with, something maybe that people don't know that they need to know. I'm putting you on the spot here.
Gee, I gave in my wedding ring story already.
I don't know. I think there are a lot of tasty products out there now. There's like blueberry powder and dry blueberry wine. So people are getting quite creative, and I think that's great.
And the blueberry teas, if you haven't sampled those yet, some of the blueberry teas are really, really tasty and have some of those antioxidant qualities that some of your callers mentioned as well. Try some blueberry tea if you haven't. And some of the wines, as Lily said, some of the wines are excellent. Some of them not so much, but some of them are excellent.
And you're not going to name names today.
I'd point you to the semi-dries. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, me too.
Well, thank you both for being here. That was David Handley, a vegetable and small fruit specialist at the University of Maine Cooperative Extension. Also, Lily Calderwood, also with the Cooperative Extension as a wild blueberry specialist and assistant professor of horticulture. I want to note that we've posted on our Facebook page a list of blueberry festivals coming up in Maine. Season starts next month. Sandra Harris ran the board today. Ella Boyd took your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as links and resources at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Today's program was part of Maine Calling's ongoing coverage of topics that reflect what is iconic in Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.